Hi everyone, this is Pranjal in the 10th episode of Not Another Depressed Teen. I know for past episodes I've brought in researchers and doctors and educators, but for this episode I'm doing something a little different and talking to one of my dearest friends and my sweet mate, Natalie. Like me, Natalie also has OCD, and I realized although I've spoken about my experiences with OCD in almost every episode we've had, I haven't done an exclusive episode on it yet, so here you go. And before we go on, a quick disclaimer, Natalie and I are going to be talking about our experiences. Obviously, everyone's experiences with OCD are unique, and I don't want to generalize. And also, Natalie and I aren't professionals by any means, so this episode is going to be largely anecdotal. Okay, enough of me talking. Natalie, is there anything you want to add?
I feel like you said that very well, like that everyone's experience is very different, and I think that's something very important to OCD. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to like generalize like what the experience is. Obviously there's some like overlapping symptoms, but I think it's just very important to realize like the differences and how like unique each case can be. So don't feel like you have to fit in like little box of like OCD stereotypes. I didn't even realize I had OCD. It took me a while because I didn't think I fit into the little like box of OCD.
Good point, because I think most people, when I tell them I have OCD, they're like, oh, like you really like having things neat, like does it bother you that these pencils aren't in line? And it's it can be that, but it's not always that.
Yeah, I got that too a lot when I was, like, the first time I told, like, my friends, they're like, oh, like, so I didn't realize, like, I thought you, I didn't think you liked cleaning surfaces, because we had just watched a video in psychology about, like, OCD symptoms, and they were very centric around cleaning and being neat. So when I told them that, they're like, I didn't think you had it, like, you like cleaning, like... And I'm not, like, a super obsessively neat person, so I think... a lot of people find that invalidating. Like, they're like, you can't have OCD. You, like, don't have stuff arranged on your desk. It's like, that's not the huge part of it, but some people do go through those symptoms.
Yeah, and, like, I definitely clean more than the average person. It used to be excessive. It's not anymore because of therapy, which I think we can get into later. But that's not really the root of it. And the root of OCD is never going to be something like cleaning, because at the end of the day, that's just a symptom. I really think the root of OCD is in the intrusive thoughts. Like, that's what the obsessive comes from. From, like these unwanted negative thoughts. And then to get rid of these negative thoughts, you engage in behaviors. Like, cleaning could be an example, or even, like checking locks a lot, or things that have no logical connection to the intrusive thought, but doing them brings you some temporary relief from the thought.
Yeah, basically, like, it's, like, you get these thoughts that you can't control, or these fears. It's, like, I kind of describe it as having, like, anxiety, but to the extreme. Like, not being able to filter what your mind gets stuck on. Yeah. And then your mind repeats that thought over and over and over again. And the only way you can find, like, short-term relief is through doing these compulsions. And then you get stuck in the cycle because, at least for me, every time I do these compulsions, I felt like they were less effective. Yeah. So I had to go back and do them even more. So you're stuck in this vicious cycle of, oh, I have this bad thought, I need to... like contradict it, or like, what's the word, like oppose it or nullify it by doing this compulsion, because it's gonna bring me like relief, and most it does for a little bit, but then it doesn't last for that long. So
like, I think like the example I like to give people is someone might have a lot of intrusive thoughts about like, what if the food in the fridge is poisonous and like my entire family's gonna die when we eat it. So like, they know it's not, but they can't help having these thoughts again and again. And to relieve these thoughts, they might do something like knock on the fridge 3 times before opening the door. And there's like no logical link between knocking on the fridge and the food being poisonous. And the person knows that. There's no logic behind these things. But doing that brings relief. Yeah. And you might be thinking, okay, what's the big deal if you're knocking on the fridge 3 times before eating? But like you were saying, it like eventually 3 times won't be enough. It's going to become 5 times and 20 times, and soon you have, like, a 20-minute process to do before you start your meals, and you're running late for things. And, like, usually it's not even one thing. It's, like, you're anxious about multiple things, so you have all of these crazy routines or compulsions going on at once, and it just makes it really difficult to lead a normal life.
Yeah, because like you were saying, there's different areas where it can affect. Like, at least what happened to me is I would be like stuck in one area for a bit, mm-hmm. and I would have a couple of obsessions outside of like my area, but yeah. after I was done with that one, it another obsession would come up in a different area, so it was like, or a different topic.
Yeah.
So it was like this constant cycle of, oh, maybe I get one thing out of the way, but then something else comes up, and it's like this never-ending, like, obsession thing. But we can talk about this later, but, like, therapy definitely has helped a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. And also, like, not all obsessions have compulsions. Not yeah. all intrusive thoughts come with this, like, what's the word for compulsion that isn't compulsion? Like, the soothing rituals.
Yeah.
And some soothing rituals don't necessarily have a concrete intrusive thought behind them yeah. either. Like, I just do this because it makes me feel better, and I can't really explain why.
Yeah, and I know that there's a lot of, like, compulsions that are also internal, so they don't mm-hmm. always have to be, like, external compulsions. I know, like, pure OCD, which is, like, you yeah. only have, like, thoughts, and you, like, do stuff in your head that serves as those compulsions, but they're internal. So, like, try not think. I know, at least for me, I did have a couple of those. So, like, I would try not to think about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my compulsion. Just, like, or going through, like, all the thoughts in my head to see if I messed up somewhere. Like, yeah. replaying the day and being like, oh, like, where did this happen? Like, what if I said something wrong? So then I go back in my, like, mind and try to figure out if I did say something wrong. And obviously, you can't, with certainty, look back on, like, how your day was or if you said something bad or wrong. So that uncertainty causes even more distress. And I think that's also a huge part of OCD, like, the uncertainty and trying to get some control. At least for me, that's how I...
Yeah.
That's how it felt for me. Like, there were some things I was uncertain about, and it made me very, very uncomfortable, like, having to live with that uncertainty. So I tried to do these compulsions so I could get rid of that uncertainty and actually make it more concrete. And that's how I felt like a lot of mine started, like, trying to get some control over things I didn't have control.
Yeah, I think it was like that for me too. And I think in general, OCD tends to be a control issue for mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
Because, like, my like OG intrusive thought that my mom's going to get hit by a car when she leaves yeah. the house. And obviously I can't control that. So in order to soothe that anxiety that might happen, I started doing all these rituals. And then that anxiety, like, grew. Like, it didn't have to be a car. It could be, like, oh, someone might come into my house and they yeah. might shoot my mom.
Yeah.
Or they might start shooting other people in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And then it grew to things, like, not related to death either. Because, like,
yeah.
as you grow older, like, more stressors are introduced to your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, at least for me, like, I had this negative framework as a kid for dealing with stressors, which was, like, overthinking and, like, kind of illogical behaviors that drain my resources. So, like, as I grew older, like, the list of negative intrusive thoughts and the list of rituals mm-hmm. grew.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but I also started with very similar, like, obsessive thoughts. I, like, every time I would go to school, I was worried my mom wouldn't come back, like, mm-hmm. something would happen to her, and that, I was also, like, very anxious around cars. Like, I was yeah. really worried she'd get in the car accident, and, like, I wouldn't see her whenever I had to be picked up, or just in general. I was just, I don't know, like, maybe it's the fact that it's the age we're coming to terms with mortality,
yeah.
and it's just very scary to think about people that you love not coming back into your life that made it, like, started that uncertainty for me, because I had no control on whether my parents would live or not, so I would do all these rituals to make sure that nothing would happen to them.
Yeah.
And obviously, it doesn't really control anything, but when you're little, that's how the world works.
Yeah, we were, like, talking about this last night, but it's interesting how both of our OCD kind of started from, like, similar anxieties. Even though, like, I had, like, a traumatic event. Like, my mom was seriously injured in a car accident, and that's kind of what triggered everything. And I know, like, there wasn't anything quite like that.
Yeah, I don't remember if there was anything. Maybe, like, witnessing car crashes, because, like, sometimes you see them. But I don't have, like, a concrete, this is where it started.
Yeah, and I think that's important to bring up, because, like, OCD isn't always triggered by, like, a single traumatic event.
Yeah,
it can just
for sure.
be it can just be growing up and, like, realizing, like, wait, car accidents are a thing?
Yeah.
That's terrifying. You're telling me, like, a loved one of mine could die at any moment? Like, there doesn't have to be a traumatic event. Sometimes just new information growing older can trigger this.
Yeah. Yeah, and something, like, additional to that, I feel like one of the first, when I was going through therapy, my therapist was like, I want you to think back on, like, what compulsions you did when you were little that you didn't realize were really compulsions. And one of the biggest things was asking for reassurance. I was huge on that. Like, I would ask my parents if things were going to be okay, or, like, depending on what I was worried. I don't really, it's not on top of my head on what exactly I worried when I was little. I do know the, like, parents dying was a huge one.
Yeah.
But I do remember I would ask for my parents for so much reassurance. It was, like, sometimes even exhausting for them because they had no way of soothing my anxiety. Like, telling me that things were going to be fine were not working. Like, it wasn't working.
Yeah.
There was a point where it did help. But then as I asked for more reassurance, I just couldn't get enough of it. And that was a huge problem when I was little. I kept asking for reassurance, and at some point, it didn't work. So it caused me to, like, go through more concrete sort of compulsions. And I think, well, not even only concrete. I think another big one of mine was, I grew up religious, and I was really afraid of, like, going to hell, or just, like, the idea that someone's constantly in my mind. And it's just very scary to think that, people can, like, read your thoughts when you have such negative, intrusive thoughts that you aren't in control of. But I didn't realize I, like, wasn't fully in control of them. I thought it was just, like, an evil part of me, which I guess when you're little and you're trying to figure out, like, religion with this, like, disorder, it doesn't really mix very well. So I would do rituals to cancel out things in my head if I thought something negative. I'd have to say over and over again, like, you didn't mean that, you didn't mean that. Until I felt like I was satisfied with the fact that I was a good person. And I was just, well, I grew up Catholic, so I was really obsessive over, like, saying my sins, like, over and over again, or praying what I did. Again, that was, like, one form of OCD, and I felt like there are a lot of rituals in the Catholic Church that made it easy for me to do compulsions. So that was a huge thing for me. But obviously, like, religion doesn't always trigger OCD episodes. It was just, like a very personal, like a personal thing, because I guess, like, being little, and it was, like, at the time I was dealing with mortality, I was afraid of dying, I was afraid of going to hell, and I was afraid of these thoughts that I was having, and I had, like, I felt guilty saying that to, like, people, to my parents, like, oh, I don't want to say that. Sometimes I think of, like, very dark negative things, and I don't feel like I'm in control of them, because, like, I feel like people are gonna blame it on you, like, oh, you're in control of your thoughts, why are you actually thinking this? Does this mean you're a bad person? And that was, like, a huge thing for me. Like, I felt like my OCD triggered, like, morality, which I do know some people, like, struggle with that, like, moral scrupulosity, like, feeling like your OCD thoughts make you a bad person, and, like, trying to control that. So that was also, like, another huge thing for me growing up.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common experience with OCD.
Yeah,
because
I know, yeah.
Like, most people, when you start having these intrusive thoughts, like, most people think that your thoughts define you.
Yeah.
And perhaps for the majority of the population, that's true.
Yeah.
But definitely not for people with OCD.
Yeah. And going into that, like, thinking mentality makes it so much worse, because they tell you you're in control of your thoughts, and, like, it defines you, and then you're not in control of these thoughts, and they're horrible, and you don't think you're a bad person, and you would never act on these things, but you just have no control over what's going into your head, and it just makes you feel like a horrible person, because you're told that your thoughts really define you. So.
Yeah, and I think that's really the core of a lot of OCD treatment. That's, at least for me, when I started exposure therapy and systematic desensitization, before all that, I had to, like, accept the idea, like, okay, these thoughts are not mine.
Yeah.
Like, my brain is a thought-producing machine.
Yeah.
And it will
come
up with things that are, like, absolutely absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Things that I would never do. And, like, just because my brain can come up with something, like, that doesn't, like, make me a bad person.
Yeah.
So, I've, like, one of the skills my therapist taught me, which was really helpful, is when you have, like, an intrusive thought, just thinking, like, I just think, like, wow, that is such a weird thing to come up with. Anyways, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like, kind of trying to separate, like, intrusive thoughts from, like, actual thoughts.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, what my therapist did is, like, she made me draw my negative thoughts, like, my mm-hmm. OCD. She's like, oh, we're gonna make a monster. And this monster lives in your head, and it's not you. And every time you have these intrusive thoughts, don't link them to yourself. Link them to this monster. And a part of it made me, like, it definitely helped me feel better about mm-hmm. myself. And, like, it improved my self-esteem. Because it is very taxing to think that all these thoughts make you a horrible person. So being able to see it as, like, a different entity from yourself was very relieving for me. Because I was able to distance and, like, myself and realize, this is not really what I want to think. This mm-hmm. is my disorder. And I can control the way I react to it. I can't control what goes into my head. But I can do my best, like, through a bunch of different treatments to respond, to see how I respond to it. And I think a huge aspect of treatment is figuring out how to respond so you don't feed into that vicious cycle, which is huge. Because if you, like, actually follow through with these compulsions, it makes the cycle go on over and over again, and you're really not going to get relief. That's just your brain, the way your brain works. So you need to figure out a way how to distance yourself from that and respond in a way that won't trigger the same cycle.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That was something that was really helpful for me to understand, like, I do not control my thoughts, but I control my reactions yeah. to them. That was really the game changer, and I think that's, like, the prerequisite mm-hmm. for systematic desensitization, mm-hmm. which I think is something yeah, that is. Helped yeah, both yeah, yeah. of us. It is, yeah. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so exposure response prevention yeah. or, like, systematic desensitization mm-hmm. is basically when you, like, it's a form of therapy. It's very useful for OCD in particular, mm-hmm. and it's when you have, like, these thoughts. I also see it done on phobias too.
Yeah.
So you have this fear, this, like, big thing, and your therapist tries to make you, like, be with this fear or think this thought. Like, say you're afraid of chickens. Mm-hmm. They put a chicken in front of you, and or, like, a toy chicken, and you have to look at it. And then little by little, like, you work up to actually being able to have the chicken, like, next to you, on you. You're able to touch it. And that's, like, mostly for phobias. And OCD works in a similar way. Mm-hmm. Like, you slowly get exposed to that for, like, periods, like, certain periods of time. And then you have to try not to do compulsions at that time. Mm-hmm. That's the way they did it for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just not, I would try my best not to respond to these compulsions. And it would start by smaller times, and then it would get, like, bigger until I was able to go long periods of time without responding to these, not doing these compulsions or responding to these fears and being able to sit with the uncomfortableness, so, like, an uncertainty of my thoughts or of my fears.
Yeah, exposure therapy is a very baby step process,
yeah, it is,
which
yeah.
makes it a lot easier because you start with the things that make mm-hmm. you the least anxious.
Yeah.
You work from the least scary to mm-hmm. the most scary. And then even within each fear, like you said, you won't immediately hold the chicken. You might start by looking at a cartoon drawing of the chicken
yeah.
and seeing, like, can I stare at this drawing for 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
How about 10 minutes? Like, how long until I feel like I can't handle it anymore
yeah.
and I need to, like, do the compulsion?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the good thing about it is it's actually really effective.
It is, like, yeah.
Compared to generalized anxiety, for mm-hmm. example, OCD is much easier
yeah.
to treat
yeah.
because there's more concrete fears, whereas generalized anxiety tends to be like, oh, I'm afraid of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Both medications and like exposure therapy are really effective. So if you
yeah.
can get treatment, like, OCD is not, it's really not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think both of us are, like, great examples that, like, you can have OCD and still live mm-hmm. like a happy, fulfilling, successful
yeah.
life.
I will say though that if you can't handle exposure response prevention,
mm-hmm.
it's, like, perfectly fine. I know, at least for me, when I was doing it, I could not handle being exposed to my fears for that long. And that's when I had to go on medicine. So I could actually go through the treatment, because I couldn't go
uh-huh.
through the treatment without, like, having something to counter my thoughts. So at least for me, I had to go on medicine. And it's a long story about how my parents didn't want me to go on meds. But it helped me go through exposure response prevention more successfully
mm-hmm.
because now I felt like my fears were something that were, like, digestible. Because there was a period of time where it was, like, very, like, I could not live, like a normal life with mm-hmm. OCD. And like my fears were so bad and so emotionally taxing that I just could not do exposure response prevention because of how much anxiety and how much the stress it caused me. So I needed to go on medicine so I could actually handle the treatment. So that was my experience. So if you find it a little bit too difficult to do exposure response prevention, you could always talk to your therapist and your psychiatrist, and they're gonna know what is gonna be helpful, because I know that different form of approaching exposure response prevention with medication definitely helped me so much.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And there's still a lot of stigma mm-hmm. about taking medications yeah. for any kind of mental health issue. But I would say to people listening, like, don't care about the mm-hmm. stigma. Like, that's the social construct. Yeah. Your OCD is very real.
Yeah.
You need to be open-minded, talk to your therapist, and find things that work for you. Because yeah. more likely than not, there is a treatment mm-hmm. out there for you.
Yeah.
It might not be medication, and if it is medication, it might not be the first one you try.
Yeah,
you might. Sure, you might. Yeah. It sometimes it takes time to find mm-hmm. something that works for you, mm-hmm. or like a combination of different types of treatments that yeah. work for you. But like, treatments do exist, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's not an incurable illness.
Yeah.
It's, well, it's manageable with mm-hmm. treatment.
Yeah,
you can manage OCD.
Yeah, I will say I don't think it fully goes away.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I haven't heard a single person that has said that like it fully goes away, but it makes it so much more manageable and something you could actually, like you said, live a normal life with. And there's so many different treatments and a lot of different medications, and like, stigma is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. You should not feel bad about taking medicine. Like, the way I approached it, because I definitely felt a lot of guilt about going on meds for like when I first started, but the way I told the things I told myself was that if this is going to help me live a normal life and I can actually go on with my life, it isn't like a burden. Like, why am I saying no to something that can potentially like save my life or potentially like allow me to actually have a normal day-to-day experience? So that's how I told myself. Like, I didn't want to be in that situation anymore. And even though I was really afraid of meds, I thought it would be the best for, like, just being actually free of the burden of not being able to step away from your fears.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Natalie. And I'm going to stop you right there because I don't want this episode to get too long. We're going to release a part 2 too, just so it's like a bit easier to process the information into bits. If there's any thoughts you guys have about this episode, please let me know. For those of you listening, as always, please feel free to email us at notanotherdepressedteen@gmail.com. And I really appreciate you guys taking the time to support our podcast. And I hope this episode was helpful. I hope these personal anecdotes were informational or provided a degree of relatability to some of you guys. And yeah, thanks for listening. And I'm looking forward to releasing part 2 soon.